You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right. My name is Rick Boyd, and I am the CTO and one of the founders of Paraphrase. And I'm here in the studio with my friend Alok Sharma of Sharma Analytics. And I'm going to let Alok explain what his business does.
Hey, how's it going, Rick? Rick, thanks for inviting me out. It's good to talk. But yeah, you know, I'm the founder of Sharma Analytics. We've done some work together in the past. We are outsourced chief information officers. We work with lower middle market companies, right? So a little bit bigger than what you would consider a small business. But of the size where maybe they don't want to have a full-time chief information officer. So we fit that bill for a number of companies in, you know, manufacturing, some are software companies. We do it for dental chains. It's a wide gamut of companies who need a part-time chief information officer.
Very cool. And that's a really important role too. And a lot of companies don't have the budget to have a full-time chief information officer, but they still need that service.
Yeah. You know, I think the way we look at it is everybody needs technology advice, right? I mean, everybody, regardless of the organization or the business you're in. And the question is, what sort of advice are you getting? And if you're not getting great advice, it can be very, very costly. And so the way we look at it is that everybody should have access to an experienced chief information officer who's aware of best practices, who has done it before, and who can, you know, quickly kind of help you make decisions about what your organization should be spending money on in terms of technology.
Very cool. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
They can hit us on our website, sharmanalytics.com. They can reach us at info@sharmanalytics.com. And they can also find us on LinkedIn, Alok Sharma. I think it's Sharma AL is my handle on LinkedIn. And that's another great way to hit me. If you message me on any of those, we'll get back to you.
Sounds good. So let's dive right into it. Security. Online security, it's a big deal. It really is a big deal today.
It is. It's funny. We're talking to a client today, and it was almost all about security today, right? That was the whole conversation. And this executive, you know, he has said to me a couple of times, that's what keeps him up at night, right? Even during this whole, you know, COVID situation where they shut down a bunch of their offices for 2.5 months, right? Completely shut down. Could not run anything out of their offices. And even during that, security was like his top concern. For a variety of reasons. He had been part of an organization that had been hit with a cyber incident in the past, and he knew how awful it is to kind of recover from that. That was a big part of it. But it's funny to the number of executives that say that to me now, that cyber security is kind of the thing that they worry about.
Well, I think that's even more true today with everybody working remotely, because that opens up a whole new can of worms that you got to worry about.
Yeah. You know, people are, I think, you know, one of the things that was always difficult to secure was someone else's device, right? And almost everybody is in a BYOD or bring your own device environment. Almost everybody's using their personal cell phone to answer business emails.
And we're working on our personal networks now too.
Yeah. Yeah. So the BYOD, your personal device, that was kind of a sticky wicket to deal with already. And then, yeah, now in some cases, people are checking email on personal laptops, right? Personal tablets. And like you said, on their personal networks or maybe at the Airbnb's network. And so you've taken all those issues, and we've just added another layer of complexity to them, another layer of things that we have to worry about.
One more thing to keep them awake at night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Seriously, one more thing to keep them awake at night. And I think you can get a handle on these things, right? That's not to say that an organization can be completely bulletproof and nothing will ever happen to them.
That's impossible.
It's impossible. Absolutely impossible.
Anybody that tells you that.
Yeah.
Run.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Right. The moment someone says something like that, you can. Just
you're talking to the wrong person.
Yeah. Right. It's really about how do we control incidents and how do we capture them before they become serious?
How do you mitigate risk?
You got it. Yeah. That's really what you're shooting for. Right. How much can we contain it? How quickly can we be alerted if something happens?
Yeah.
Right. That's almost the most important thing.
Well, I want to talk about the number one threat out there, because I do talk to a lot of risk managers and IT security people. You know, paraphrase as a SaaS, we have to go through a very rigorous security check before these companies will sign up for our software. And without a doubt, every single risk manager or IT person I speak with, their biggest thing that they're worried about is phishing.
Yep. It's the easiest way into an organization. If you're someone malicious, the easiest way in is to phish somebody.
Well, I don't think people know how easy it is that you can just basically take someone's logo off their website and stick it into your own email. You know, I get emails not only from like vendors or, you know, software that I've signed up for, but I get ones from banks that I don't even have a bank account with. And I know someone's clicking on it. Fortunately, not me most of the time, but somebody is.
Yeah, you know, I got a Bank of America email came through and passed through my spam filter, right? Came into my inbox. And I called them. I called Bank of America because it looked that real.
Authentic, yeah.
And the phone number that they had listed on there when I Googled it was the Bank of America.
It was legit,
It was the Bank of America customer support line. And sure enough, but you know, then I spoke to someone and they have like a control code on their email so they can trace it and they can tell you pretty quickly if it was their email or not. But you know, I was looking at this thing over and over again. I'm like, this might be a real email.
Yeah.
This might really be from Bank of America where I, you know.
Right. And you're in this field. I mean, this is something you do every day.
Yeah.
So when it looks that authentic to you, you can imagine what it looks like to somebody who's just doing their job. And this isn't something that they think about all day long.
Yeah. I know, you know, we just saw an email from that allegedly came from the CEO of a client to the controller to wire a bunch of money to some account, right?
That's a common, you know, activity.
It is. Well, request. You know, because either, you know, they can scrape the names of everybody either from your website, right? The About Us section,
yep.
Or they can grab it off of LinkedIn, right? So it's not too tough to figure out who the controller, right? Who is an executive there and then who might be controlling the purse strings, right?
Well, and there's another black hole too, and that is, you know, all the online shopping that we do. We don't know who, you know, what kind of security they have in place. And we don't know if they've ever been hacked, you know, especially some of these guys that try to host themselves and do silly stuff like that.
It's true. But yeah, you know, the phishing is absolutely the easiest way in. And you know what I say to people is that, you know, there's a handful of things that you can do, very inexpensive. And I think every organization should do it, right? I don't care if you're 3 people or 30 people or 300. And one of them is phishing training. It's for phishing simulation is sometimes mm-hmm. what it's called in the industry. And what it is it's fake, you know, simulated phishing emails that are sent out to your team, to your employees or whoever has email.
See who click.
And see who clicks. And if they click on an email they weren't supposed to, usually they will be sent to a web-based training that explains mm-hmm. to them why you shouldn't have clicked on that email, right? Either – you know, here are the signs that this was a phishing email.
Well, I think one of the most important things too is before you click on that email or a link or, you know, an attachment is to hover over that email address and confirm and look at, you know, where that email address really did come from. Because there's a nickname usually on the email and that's not really the actual email address.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, this one that came from the CEO, sure enough, had his full name on it. And then you hover over it and, you know, sure enough, it's, you know, at some, you know, looked like it was a Russian-based domain.
Well, a lot of them do seem to come from strange places, that's for sure.
But phishing simulation is generally, it's not super expensive. And you see some really good results very quickly, right? Usually, you know, you'll look at how many people clicked on this simulated email in month one. You see how many people have done it in month two. And by month three, people have gotten pretty good. And it's not usually very expensive. It's pretty easy to implement. And well, the benefits are fantastic.
Compared to a phishing incident, I mean, it's way cheaper. It's not even close.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody on the phone with your bank begging them to see if they can stop a wire transfer.
Yeah.
You know, generally you have a pretty expensive person doing that.
Yeah.
Who's on hold for a long time trying to get a human.
That sounds like a lot of stress that we probably don't need either right now.
It's you're absolutely right. And so this is pretty low cost to avoid that.
Yeah.
And that's your company's finances, right? Yep. Like, you know, there are, I have definitely seen places that, have had to have a tough conversation with a customer of theirs because their customer's information was leaked. And, you know.
That's not a good call.
No. I mean, you think of all the tough conversations you have to have with a client.
I don't know what day to do that or what hour to do that. I'm certainly not going to do that at 8 o'clock on Monday, but I'm not sure 5 o'clock on Friday is any good either. Yeah, that's a tough call to make. But what are some things, in addition to the simulation, which I think is a great idea, what are some other things that people and organizations need to do to protect themselves?
Multi-factor authentication. Right,
that's a
which
big
is
one.
That's a real easy one. You've probably already paid for it,
mm-hmm.
some level of it, whether it's Office 365 or G Suite. And for most of those subscriptions, it's just flipping a switch.
I think people don't see the value in that until that actually happens. You know, because Microsoft and Gmail do a great job in attempting to protect you from phishing. Not only protecting you from phishing, but if you've been a victim of it, they actually do proactively stop you from spamming other people, and you do have to go through a series of steps to recover your email. And I think that's part of the value that those software applications do provide over some other ones.
They do, and you've paid for it.
Yeah.
For most organizations, it's a switch.
Right.
You just have to turn it on and put in, you know, have your employees put in their phone numbers or.
Yeah. Well, I know authentication gets a little intrusive. You know, you've got two-step authentication, you've got two-factor authentication, then you get into device authentication. You know, all of us doing our banking online, you know, we know how much, how intrusive that can get at times. But those things are really important. And can you talk a little bit about those three things, two-step versus two-factor and what device verification is?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so some of it depends on, you know, if we're talking about your employees, some of it depends on what you've put in your employee handbooks and what you've told your employees about them using their personal devices. And you know, some of them, you know, you're going to tell them, hey, you're going to have to install a piece of software that, that sort of, in a way, segregates part of your phone for company use. And by doing that, there's a couple of things. One, you can do, you know, some probably better authentication than texting people codes. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Another thing, too, is then you've got access, or the company has access to blow away part of someone's phone if the phone got lost,
mm-hmm.
if the phone is stolen, if, you know, there's separation in the company. And so it's really handy to be able to install those partitions on those devices.
Well, I think that's a tricky part of it because, you know, we have these devices. We don't really want a second device from our company. It's a pain to have two of these devices now. But now you are doing business with your own device. And I think as a result of that, as a consequence of that, you do have to give the company some control over that experience.
Yeah. You know, and at least, you know, with our clients, we find that there usually isn't too much static, you know, from employees, mostly because, you know, you are kind of putting that in front of employees. Do you want to walk around with two phones? And most don't want to walk around with two phones.
No.
I don't want to walk around with two phones. And so, you know, and then laying out, in, you know, very clearly what this gives you access to. You know, in most cases, no, I don't want access to your personal Gmail account.
Right. Right?
No, I don't want access to, you know, your Facebook profile. But, you know, if your contacts are sitting in the corporate partition,
yeah,
then I'm going to, you know, if we think your phone got stolen, we're going to blow it away.
Right.
Right. Because we don't, you know, we don't want to have that tough conversation with a client.
Well, I think that's, you know, a lot of companies, they have to audit emails. And I think that kind of falls into that same kind of world. You know, nobody really wants somebody going into their email account looking at their emails. But when you're doing business on behalf of a company, I think you basically have to.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you know, this, you know, security is funny in a way because, you know, we want to talk about the technology and we want to talk about next generation firewalls and we want to talk about, you know, how to lock down, bring your own devices. But a lot of it is it's about humans and it's about processes and it's, you know, about auditing your user lists.
Yeah, you have to. I'll tell you, one of the things that that we constantly deal with is, you know, as I mentioned, we typically to get a contract, there is, you know, some involvement with the IT team. And they're very worried about phishing. They're very worried about security, as they should be. That's their purpose in life there. And then we'll see on the user side, a lot of users will try to save a couple dollars by trying to share passwords and user IDs. And they're always mad at us when we tell them, listen, we can't let you do that. You know, and they always think it's like, well, you just want to charge us for more licenses. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that isn't some of it, of course. But on the other hand, it is a major security risk sharing user IDs and passwords. When you start sharing credentials across your organization, you're really opening Pandora's box.
You are. And you're exposing yourself in ways that might not be a concern if everything is okay. But, you know, imagine this, if you're sharing credentials, and especially now when, you know, a lot of white collar people are working from home, if you're sharing credentials, you really don't know how somebody is using a tool that you've given them. Right. You don't know what they're doing with this tool that you've given them access to. And that may bother you and that may not bother you. Right. But, you know, let's say
you're adding risk though.
Yeah. You know, and do you, you know, you have this shared account between a bunch of people, at your company and everybody's using a shared password for some tool and someone does something malicious with it or maybe something that, wouldn't reflect well on your company. Okay. Well, now you've got to spend the time to figure out which one of the five users was, I don't know, making flyers for their local Nazi party. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, do you really want to?
Is it worth it? Is it really worth it?
You know, especially for a lot of these software as a service packages, right? When you're buying a couple licenses, the cost tends to go down. Is it really worth it to try to figure that out? Or, you know, figure out who put the credentials into a malicious website and had the credentials hacked.
Well, you might find that all five people actually, you know, contributed one way or another. You know, you got the person who bought it and said, hey, Billy, you know, you can use my account. And so then Billy uses it. You don't know what Billy's doing, just like you mentioned it. He shares it with someone else who maybe even the first person didn't even know. So it can really create a major security risk.
Absolutely. And that's worrying about a that's worrying about really thinking about security. You want to know where people are using what. And beyond that too, then, you know, there's also always the question of like, there's always features in those pieces of software that are specific, tailored to a specific user, whether it's saving settings or things like that. And if everybody is always worried about messing with someone else's settings, like the amount of, this is not a security issue, but the amount mm-hmm. of time someone has to spend to like not step on someone's toes or log in when someone's not using it.
Yeah,
are you
it's
really?
It's not worth it. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what that saying was. It was something like an ounce of prevention, you know, saves you a whole bunch of money, something like that. I don't know.
Whatever that was. That's the
it
one.
Was good. I do know another thing that that I think is a risk that I don't see a lot of companies really paying enough attention to, and that is using old computers and, you know, trying to maximize their investment of a computer that they bought 5-6 years ago, and also using ancient operating systems and old browsers.
Ooh, old browsers are the those are the really bad ones, right? I mean, old operating systems can be pretty bad too, but old browsers really leave you susceptible to a lot of things. And honestly, a lot of times modern websites just won't work right in certain old browsers.
Correct.
Or features are disabled because it knows you're using an old browser and it won't let you do certain things.
We've fortunately seen a decrease in the use of Internet Explorer. even though that's another topic by itself, I think Microsoft really blew it when they switched the name from Internet Explorer to Edge. And I'm guessing there's some good reason why they did it. But when we first got started, even just 3 years ago, we had as many as 30% of our users trying to use Internet Explorer. And we had to tell them that, listen, I don't know if you know this, but Microsoft has discontinued that product. They don't support it anymore. There's no software upgrades. You know, there's no bug fixes. There's no patches, nothing. And I think that is a big problem, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I mean, environmentally forward thinking part of me hates saying this, but old computers just aren't worth, they're not worth fixing. Just replace them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get, you know, 5-6 years into a device.
You've more than paid for it by that point.
Yeah. And, a new device generally is not super expensive. And it's just, you know, you think about how much you have to pay a skilled person to repair a device.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it.
Well, and today they know how to recycle this stuff too. So, you know, when you talk about that green element, and we're surrounded by green here, it is great that you're not throwing the stuff in the trash, that it is being recycled to some extent. And because they do need to be replaced on a regular basis. You know, if you've gotten 3 years with a computer, you know, maybe that works at home, but in the business environment, it's really not a healthy thing to do.
Yeah, just not worth it. And, you know, for our clients, it's a 3-year, that's our planning for laptops, desktops is a 3-year replacement cycle. That's what we plan for.
And on the software side, you're right. It's not just a security issue, but it's a user experience issue. When you're using these old browsers, your software, whatever you've just invested money into, that's supposed to save you likely time and money and help you do things faster and better, you are actually mitigating the value that software brings when you're using old browsers.
It's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Internet Explorer is really, that's a really obvious example. But even older, really old versions of Chrome.
We still have almost 10% of users trying to use Internet Explorer.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
What's number one?
Chrome.
Is it Chrome?
Yeah. Chrome.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Firefox or the Mozilla.
Somewhere. It would be Firefox next. But I think Chrome. I think Chrome has basically flipped the switch with Microsoft. When Microsoft gave up that Internet Explorer name, I still know a whole lot of people that don't even know that the product is called Edge.
It's for a while there, you couldn't really tell the logos apart either, which led to some additional problems. We have a client that has a really old piece of factory automation software, and it's very old. And I mean, we're in the process of replacing it. It only works in Internet Explorer.
And so you got to go to one machine, and you better hope that machine never dies.
That's actually where we're at right now. People are, but it's funny because when Edge first came out, people thought they were launching Internet Explorer and didn't know why this application wouldn't run.
Right.
And that's why. It took us a couple of days to figure out that they were clicking on Edge.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing. So what would you say are some of the building blocks of an effective security implementation?
So, you know, the basic stuff is the multi-factor authentication. We talked about that. We talked about, you know, phishing simulation, phishing training. Those are, you know, super, super valuable things. Another thing, this is a process thing, not a technology thing. But, you know, you do want, you know, verbal confirmation of money transfers, right? So I'm not talking about paying an invoice that came in from a vendor, you know, but you know, if somebody
that requires multi-factor authentication as well.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it really does, right? You should contact the executive or whoever has asked you to transfer money.
Don't let someone transfer money without there being a second person
yep.
to authenticate that that is a legit transfer.
Whether you hear their voice, whether they leave you a voicemail, right? Whatever it is, but there needs to be a second, like you said.
Yeah.
A human version of multi-factor authentication for transfers.
Yeah.
And that catches it, you know, that catches a decent amount. But, you know, once again, that's something that doesn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the really basic things that I think you can just do within a week in mm-hmm. most organizations and put this in place. You know, beyond that, it's really thinking about, you know, where the threats are, right? Are the threats outside trying to get in? Or is it a threat that's inside getting out? And kind of understanding how you're going to tackle those and what your
that's a good point, because we think of threats as being always outside of an organization, but that's not always the case.
That's you're absolutely right. You know, so for outside in, you know, that's a good firewall as part of that. You know, and that is really helpful if you have, you know, servers on site, or if you have a bunch of offices that all have a local server. Having a good firewall in place is really recommended. You know, for firewalls, the $60 router that I have at home has a firewall in it. I'm sure it's perfectly fine for home use, right? But
mm-hmm.
you know, the sort of firewall that I think most places need to buy. I mean, these things come with subscriptions now because they're constantly updating.
Mm-hmm.
So these next gen firewalls. You know, it might be $2,000 for the device and then for 3 years of updates.
But those updates are worth it. That's actually really good money spent.
Yep.
Because in the real world, in online security, you're always one step behind, you know, these bad people doing things.
Absolutely.
You know, they're very creative people.
Yeah. So when you're looking for a firewall, generally, you know, a next gen firewall is going to come with some sort of subscription. You know, there's a bunch of vendors and, you know, we don't need to get into each and every vendor, but generally you're going to see some sort of 3 year subscription or 2 year subscription with a firewall that's probably worth buying. And that helps you protect on the outside getting in. A lot of those firewalls, you know, are looking at the packets and looking for malicious, inbound activity. A lot of the firewalls are also checking your activity, so your employees' activity, and checking to see if they're going to a malicious site. And by that, I'm not talking about, you know, a not safe for work website. I mean, they do
right.
that, right? But, you know, there's a string of phishing attacks, and they're all sending people to a certain web page that looks like your Office 365 login.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these firewalls, because they're constantly getting updates, you'll see that, oh, these credentials are being hijacked from a certain website on a certain server maybe. And a lot of the next-gen firewalls can lock down that traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So even though your people may have navigated to the site by accident, it's another barrier there that kind of keeps your people away from putting their credentials in.
Right.
So that's, you know, so the next-gen firewalls are, you know, important. And then, you know, the next thing is, what we call, you know, endpoint protection. And endpoint protection, this is the new buzz term for what we used to call, antivirus. So, you know, you're familiar with, you know, back in the day,
Nortons,
right? The Nortons and the McAfees mm-hmm. and the, and all those, and viruses, you know, protection against viruses is important, but it's gone beyond that now. And so that's why we call it endpoint protection, because it encompasses more things. Some things like, you know, like we were saying, people clicking on phishing emails and things like that. Some of the EDRs can protect against that, right? So they're checking links before your people actually navigate to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we deal with that too. I mean, a lot of times companies that sign up with us, the first thing they'll say is, hey, I'm not getting any of these emails I'm supposed to get. And then we're like, well, you got to go and get us whitelisted. You know, and that's another form of how companies are protecting themselves as well, limiting actually what kind of emails can come, because they can identify if it's from a computer or, you know, or if it's an actual person typing an email.
Yep. That's absolutely true. And, you know, so the endpoint protection is, and, you know, some of the EDR systems now are really clever. They can let an administrator roll a computer back.
Mm-hmm.
So if something malicious did happen, it could just roll back and say, let's go back to 20 minutes before they clicked on whatever link they had clicked on.
Mm-hmm.
And that could get you a lot out of a lot of jams, especially if, you know, you're getting hit by something like ransomware where it's encrypting your machine.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to, you know, roll back from that is really, 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 really beneficial. You know, that's one way you can avoid that. So that's, you know,
a tough subject to bring up to your IT manager.
Oh yeah. No, you don't, you know, there are cybersecurity vendors, you know, vendors that we use, right? Companies that specialize in nothing but cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Whether that's penetration testing, which I know you guys have your application, you've done that for your application. So they'll, you know, pen test your organization or parts of your organization. And, you know, one of the things that they'll do is a lot of them, they'll keep a retainer with them.
Yeah. And if it's insurance.
Yeah. It's incident response, but essentially, mm-hmm. you know, their angle is, you know, you can either call us when something has gone wrong, and instead of waking your CFO up and hoping he calls you, and time's ticking. And
you can call us now or you can call us later, but you're going to call us.
And your machines are slowly becoming encrypted.
Yeah, we laugh about it. It's not any fun, but it's so true.
Yeah.
A little bit of prevention does really go a long way. And I think it is more of a human risk than it is a software or a hardware risk. I mean, there's some certain things that you look for in all software, but I think that the best way to really reduce your risk of something happening is to communicate and work with your staff on these things. And I love the simulation idea because a lot of people are unaware of what phishing looks like. And these damn emails, I mean, they are just so good sometimes.
These things are coming and they're pixel perfect.
Yep.
It's a pixel perfect 365 admin email.
Yeah, exactly. And I do know, I mean, I know I don't do it, fortunately, but I do, you know, I do know that people will get an email from a bank that they don't have and they'll be like, you know, oh, I got to click on this. I got this email. I didn't even know I had a bank account with them. I thought I closed it. And they'll still click
free
on
money?
It. Yeah,
free money?
They'll still click on it. So that always I always find that fascinating. So I wanted to ask you too, is something that that I'm surprised I hasn't taken off as much as I thought it would. Single sign-on. I'm a big fan of single sign-on. I do use it. And one of the things I love about it from an IT standpoint is that with single sign-on, you could basically wipe out one person's whole company-wide software experience just like that.
Yeah, single sign-on is super powerful. And I know why it doesn't get rolled out all the time. It's because on the list of two, it seems like a convenience thing. And so convenience thing for users, right? I don't have to log into the 15 tools that I use.
Mm-hmm.
I have a login, you know, Office 365, right? And that authenticates me everywhere I need to log in. And it seems like it's a convenience thing for users. Which is why I think IT departments managers put it – it's just lower on the list.
I think they think that it actually makes them, in some cases, less secure when it's a, when I think it's actually the opposite.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I agree. I think, you know, being able to not forget.
Yeah. Who hasn't jotted a password down?
Right.
You know, who hasn't put in a Slack or, you know, whatever.
I think SSO plus, you know, multi-factor authentication, I think that's pretty powerful.
Dave's like, I better not tell my boss about this. No,
it, or, you know, hard-coded it in a config file. It's we've all seen it.
Plain text, just sitting there. It's fine. It's fine. No one's going to use this. but yeah, and so I think that's why it's lower on the list of, you know, of to-dos. Mm-hmm. Though I think the big thing is knowing that you can eliminate, you know, lock someone out of all the systems right. If you have to in a hurry. Right?
Well, that's what I wonder if you don't use it. I mean, somebody leaves the company and they were into 27 systems. You know, what do you do? How do you manage that?
Yeah. You know, that's, 27 bullets on the disembarkment list.
Right. Does anybody know Shelley's password for all 27 applications? She didn't use the same one, did she? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. SSO, I think that's why SSO falls further down the list. A lot of places don't put it in place. And honestly, it's a lot easier to do than it used to be.
Yeah.
SSO.
The original implementations were tough.
It was really tough. Things were always changing. It was tough to do. And it was kind of a pain in the butt for IT departments to manage it.
Microsoft's gotten better in general at the user experience. I've seen a big improvement over the last 5 years in their software and the user experience. Google's always had it. I mean, they've always, you know, they're the Apple of user experience. So
yeah, you know, when Gmail came out and I looked at it, I'm like, wait, this doesn't have to look crappy anymore?
Yeah. Well, Microsoft finally released something. You know, they were trying to get everybody to use Skype for Business, which was a crap product.
Ugh.
And they finally released something called Meet that actually works, you know?
Yeah. Teams, Microsoft Teams has been fantastic.
I'm sorry, Teams, not Meet.
Yeah, Meet's the Google right. product. Teams has been pretty fantastic. They need to work on some of the billing is a little wonky, like in terms of if people are dialing into meetings or you're dialing out. The billing, the per user billing is a little strange, but the user experience is pretty fantastic.
Right. I think they had that problem with single sign-on when it first came out. It was really bulky and kind of difficult to navigate through and get it set up right.
But now it's – now it's working, you know, really well.
Is it?
Yeah. We just rolled that out for some clients a month and a half ago, prompted from the big, you know, move work to home, work from home. And and like you said, Skype for Business had never really
– garbage. Absolute garbage.
And it wasn't even interoperable with Skype.
Yeah, exactly. Why call it the same damn product?
So like no one getting
Dave shaking his head over here.
So you know so it's
we used it. I mean when we used to use Skype as our Skype for dial-in line for our studios. You know before the world changed back in March and we just rapidly realized that Skype that was no longer going to meet our needs because like the video component would never work right. Anybody on low bandwidth, God forbid we had somebody trying to connect in from Hamtramck where they're all still on copper wire. We made the shift over to Zoom and it's been so much better.
I think when Zoom came out, it showed how weak that product really was.
Yep.
So
100%. Yeah. 100%. But you know, the Microsoft products look a lot better now. Managing security in there is a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
What they've done is they've kind of put the most basic security features that you want to enable accessible in a way that you don't have to be a technical person to turn it on.
Right.
And if you really want to get into the details, then there's other interfaces. You can go into the directory management and really, really tweak the security settings there if you want to.
That ease of use is so important for small companies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that can't have an IT manager full time and really doesn't have a big budget to manage that either. If you've only got 5 or 10 people on staff.
Yeah. You know, let's face it, this often ends up in the hands of the office manager. And you know, what we found though is, you know, turning on multi-factor authentication in Office 365, is really easy. And we have, you know, when a new employee is getting onboarded, you know, we have a couple of clients where the office manager just handles the whole thing and walks mm-hmm. them through how to, you know, put in their phone number. Here's the text message, blah, blah, blah. They've made it really easy. And like I said, we have we usually train non-technical people to do it.
That can manage it on their own.
Yep. Yep. That's
so security's gotten a lot easier over the years, which I think is great. When I first got into the software business, you know, all naive and what have you, I didn't think about half of these things. And soon enough, as we gained some market share, gained a little traction, won some customers, got a little publicity, you know, weird shit started happening. We've now had several DDoS attacks. You know, we've had people try to load malicious viruses into our application. You know, people have knocked down our website. Unfortunately, it's just not as nice a world as we'd all like it to be. So that's why this topic is something I wanted to talk to you about today, because it has become really important. But I also think that sometimes, because it seems so threatening, that people are a little overwhelmed by it. And really their strategy is just, I'm going to cross my fingers and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I think you're absolutely right. It seems like such a daunting thing. It's like saving for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yep. It seems so scary for so many people. They just don't end up.
Right.
They don't end up doing anything. Yeah. Or maybe they just check the box on the auto enroll and leave it at that and don't cover their eyes and don't look.
Check their statements every 5 years.
But it doesn't have to be like that, yeah. Right? I mean, there's some simple things you can do that go a long way.
Right.
Right? I wouldn't say that that's the end of the list, right? You know, a lot of the stuff we talked about, that isn't the end of the list. But this is all the easy stuff.
Well, I think those three things right there. I mean, you know, if you're just careful with these emails that you open, you know, if you get an email or like today I got a Facebook Messenger from you know, a connection with just a link in it. Nothing else. You know, not, hey, Rick, how you doing? Click on this. Nothing but just a link. You know, you should know not to click on it. Even though there is, I got to be honest, there's still, you know, there's this desire to want to click on the damn thing. But you got to know that you can't do that, you yep. know. So you got that, you know, just be really careful with those emails. I also think the multi-factor authentication is a big one. You know, you really got to have that. And we get a lot of complaints about it, that it's intrusive. You know, one day you're working on your laptop and then you go on your phone and, you know, you got to get this code and do whatever you need to do. But that little bit of inconvenience really goes a long way.
The panic, at least for me, right, the panic when I think, right, my credentials have been taken. Maybe they haven't been taken, luckily, right? But the panic that washes over me when I think something has happened.
Yeah.
It's not worth that one instance a year. Right.
Right.
Like, I'll punch in this code every time.
Yeah.
My phone's next to me anyways.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you want to cover? Anything else our viewers and listeners need to know about?
You know, if they have any questions, they can always, you know, reach out to us. We're happy to talk. Once again, you can reach us at SharmaAnalytics.com. You can find me, Alok Sharma, on LinkedIn as well. You can always drop us an email at info@sharmaanalytics.com. We're happy to talk to anybody. You don't have to be a client. You can just be worried about something. Drop us a line. We're happy to talk to anybody. No one should be afraid. No one should be afraid of technology.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you.